ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Of all our Southeast Asian neighbours, there's maybe no country that Australia feels more of an emotional connection with.
A tiny nation, just to our north, born out of a bloody independence struggle which lasted decades. East Timor's birth represented so much hope and so much promise.
But almost a quarter of a century on, Timor is running out of money, and its fractious battles with Australia over valuable gas deposits now see it turning occasionally towards China for investment and support.
We're about to sit down with one of the fathers of Timor's independence struggle, who has just returned as Prime Minister.
From the floor of the ASEAN Special Summit in Melbourne, I'm Geraldine Doogue.
And I'm Hamish McDonald. This is Global Roaming. Welcome to this special bonus edition of Global Roaming, hot on the heels of our conversation with Malaysia's Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim on the sidelines of the ASEAN Australia Summit. We're about to drop our episode with the newly elected Prime Minister, but not for the first time, of East Timor, Jenana Gusmao.
We are indeed. And, you know, just to sort of meet a man with such an extraordinary backstory, you know, freedom fighter, people went and met him in the mountains, and he came down from the mountains to basically be part of the independence getting in 2002, in and out of government, and now back in as Prime Minister, facing some incredible challenges, Hamish. The more I read about it, the more I felt that. And I felt that from him too, although he papers that over with a very sort of charm, doesn't he?
It's a pretty stark reality that's confronting East Timor right now. They've got this petroleum fund, which was really meant to see them many years into the future, but that resource has dwindled. They've been eating into the base of it rather than just operating off the profits to supply East Timor's budget. And it stands at something like $16 billion. And the predictions are that at this rate, it'll be gone within the next decade. So we're talking the early 2030s, that means East Timor could realistically have run out of money. They haven't diversified the economy. There's difficult mortality rates in East Timor, malnutrition, young people with stunted growth. So, you know, really a lot of the promise, the early promise, has not been met. And part of that picture is the fact that the Greater Sunrise gas field has not been developed. It's still a work in progress. We still don't know what its fate may be.
Well, that's the issue, that they've got loads of resources around East Timor. They are positively overladen with it, but you've got to get to it. And you've got that extremely deep Timor Sea. If you're going to start running pipelines from one place to another, you're into huge money. Now, this is causing a great deal of debate. And the question, I mean, of absolute pertinence to all those children of stunted growth is how they will develop this and who will pay. And at the moment, under the maritime boundaries that are there, Timor-Leste will receive 70% of the Greater Sunrise royalties and 30% will go to Australia if the gas is piped to Timor. If it's piped to Australia and Darwin, Timor-Leste will receive 80% of royalties. Now, that sounds like a deal that they have to do, but it's not turning out like that.
No, and in fact, Prime Minister Jenana Gusmao is adamant that it should be piped to East Timor, that there should be a processing facility developed on the southern coastline. And I'm pretty eager to talk to him about this because, as you point out, those revenue splits are pretty appealing, you would have thought, for a country that's facing a fiscal cliff like the one that East Timor is. So I think we do need to ask about that. Overlaying all of this is the China question, which has been the subtext for this entire summit. Even though China is not part of ASEAN, it's a huge feature of every conversation that seems to happen here, I think, in reality. And even if it's not mentioned by name, it is there in the background. And East Timor has signed a comprehensive strategic partnership with China. There was
whatever
some,
that means.
Exactly. So I think there are still questions about exactly what that means. It's not the same thing that the Solomon Islands did in terms of a deal with China. Some of the reporting suggests that actually Xanana Gusmao wanted more from his meeting than with Xi Jinping than what he got. But I think given the history between Australia and East Timor, the love that is felt, I think, plainly in Australia towards East Timor, worth exploring, I think.
Well, I think that, and also the fact that they could be playing tactics with us, that they, I suspect the Solomons are too, that they bring this China spectre up in order to slightly panic us and open our coffers. I might add, we are their biggest aid partner. We already supply $100 million a year to East Timor. So this is a very substantial interaction, shall we say.
And one of the other big changes that's unfolding in this region right now is that Indonesia has just elected a new president, Prabowo Subianto. Now, of course, we talked before about his complex history. He served in the Indonesian military, what became Kopassus, in East Timor in the early 80s, and allegedly was involved in some pretty significant massacres there at the time that Xanana Gusmao was a rebel commander in those jungles, in those same hillsides. So these two have what you've got to describe as a hinterland. a complex and fascinating history. So I want to hear from Xanana Gusmao what he thinks of the new Indonesian president right now.
So let's meet Xanana Gusmao. Prime Minister Gusmao, thank you very much for being with us. And we're conscious that our questions in English will be careful, because English is in fact your sort of fifth or sixth language, isn't it?
Not at all.
No?
But English, yes. Australian.
Okay. Well, welcome anyway in Australian. Look, it's clear that Australians want to engage much more with the Southeast Asian region and with East Timor in particular. How do you view us as someone to engage with? How do you currently view Australia?
From myself, looking at Australia will be how they respect our right to develop the greatest sunrise.
And do you feel Australia does respect you on that score?
Before I can say yes, but currently I believe that the Albanese government will be more open-minded, more collaborative, in a kind of respecting the interest of the other parties.
Now, that's interesting. What do you mean there? Are you talking about things like the division of royalties? How will the Albanese government be more open?
No, the problem is if the pipeline goes to Darwin or to Timor. We defended always and will defend always. We prefer that it will go to Timor-Leste, first, because it is very close to us. Second, because we'll bring the social impact to our country, to our people.
Timor-Leste is facing this fiscal cliff within a decade. Your petroleum fund is running out.
Yep.
You need to find a replacement for those funds which support your country and your community.
Yep.
Under the arrangement as it is, as far as the Greater Sunrise gas field is concerned, you would still get 80% of the revenues if it gets piped to Darwin. If it gets piped to Timor, you only get 70%. Isn't it just obvious that it's in your interest to take that deal?
The problem is the social impact.
Sure.
The social impact is the result that it will create jobs, it will form people capability to be more able to work, not to come only to Australia to seasonal work, but to do something good, very important, in Timor-Leste.
So let's talk about what you dream of then for Timor-Leste. What can be achieved?
I have to tell you that my dream is to be more independent, to push the economy, because our people fought for independence. Now, they don't feel the independence.
Really? You don't think so?
They don't feel. When we go there, oh, we fought, we suffered for independence, we don't have anything. It is what we have to do.
And is doing more business, more trade, more...
Business, trade. To sell what?
But my question is...
To sell what?
Is getting more investment...
To sell what? From... That is why we, in our program, we will push productivity because we import everything. And we can produce. That is why this is the big dream that we have is if we reduce the import by producing more.
And who's going to help you most in that? Like, is it Australia? Or are you even thinking that China might make a better partner?
Don't put two clubs there, China and Australia, because we are open to the world. Korea, Japan, Malaysia, Indonesia, we are open to the world. Don't say that we are on a stadium where only Australia and China will play.
But let's be real, though. If you're talking about developing the southern edge of your country and getting a pipeline in there, all the infrastructure that comes with that, it's going to cost something like $18 billion to do that up front. There's very few countries that can resource something like that. Australia wouldn't be able to do it on its own. Certainly Woodside wouldn't on its own. At the moment, China's investment banks are balking at that. But you need a big player to help you achieve this idea. So is China the best bet?
I cannot tell you that yes, because we are still in the conversation with Woodside and with Australia to see if we get certainty that it will go. Sure. Yes, we will, because there are many. It is open to us. We got loans from World Bank. That is why it is. We are not only in the single single source management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your other big neighbour, of course, Indonesia.
Yeah, yeah.
Has just voted to elect a new president.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a man that you have a long history with, Prabowo Subianto.
History?
Well, he was allegedly involved in massacres in East Timor his days in the military in the 1980s. Of course, you were a rebel commander at that time. In many ways, he's an old enemy of yours. How do you see him today?
He's not so old. I am older than him. And?
How do you see him today? Still as an enemy?
We established a commission, joint commission, Indonesia and Timor-Leste, to take all that of the massacres, everything. After that, we closed the book and we said, it belongs to the past. We all are committed not to happen again in the future. That was why we made the reconciliation process.
You really feel that in your heart, though? You really feel that inside you, in your core, that is the past? You've forgotten that?
Yes. Reconciliation, we did this in two ways. One, amongst us, ourselves, because we also killed each other, Timorese. We would not be able to do with Indonesia if amongst us we didn't start. We started, and after that, we went to Indonesia, we talked, they accepted, because it is not just say, oh, forget this, it was the past. No. This battalion killed this, this battalion killed that, this soldier, this, everything written. Accepted, we said, okay, both countries, the past is the past, not anymore to the future. But not forget, before Prabhu, it was Wiranto, it was Susilo, it was many others before, and we had a good relationship with them.
I mean, you're 77, I think. President José Ramos Horta is 74. So you're part of that whole marvellous freedom-fighting generation. At some point, you'll have to hand over to the next generation of people to run Timor, won't you?
Yes, of course.
When do you think that will happen?
We are trying to prepare the new generation in a way not of teaching, but of doing. The last government made many mistakes, and now we are trying to correct everything. If in these 5 years we don't do anything different and good for the people, the young generation will not. We'll say, the same. But if we start to build the conditions to them to feel, the independence is this. That's why to prepare is not, come here, do this. No. By example, by doing.
Can I ask you one final question?
Yes, ma'am.
What is your message to Australia then?
Pardon?
What is your key message to Australia and Australians then? What do you want to convey to us, particularly about the way you're going to negotiate all of these royalties, etc.?
About the people of Australia, I trust the people of Australia. About the government, it's different because government is government. But what I can ask or expect is open mind negotiation. The both sides must respect the interests of others. Only by this way we can feel that we are friends, we are brothers. Talk to us, not come and do this. Do you want an example of this?
Yes.
I was Prime Minister from 2012 to 2014. And it was from United States, it was a fan there. Every year, when we prepare the budget, they say, we can give you 15 million, we can give you 20 million. And we said, okay. And before we bring the budget to the parliament, we said, in what? Because we have to write. No, not yet, because human rights, democracy, every year. And at the time, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono organized the Bali Democracy Forum. And in my speech, I said, dear friends of underdeveloped countries or developing countries, don't trust too much in the Western countries. They promise and they put so many conditions and the world. And I told them, better to go to China because they will not ask about human rights and democracy. This is the problem of approach, no?
Prime Minister, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Geraldine, quite a lot there to unpack, but I guess that final anecdote from the East Timorese Prime Minister about the relationship with the United States and China and the comparison was pretty telling. And in many ways, even if it's not being overtly spoken about by the leaders that are here at this summit, it's the subtext, isn't it?
Yes, look, I mean, it was really a message about Australia's in there as well. I mean, the actual sort of story concerned a fund coming out of the US, but I took it as being effectively a statement about developed countries who think that they have the right to dictate terms. Having said that, I felt it mildly disappointing that he wasn't able to engage more with the trade-offs that are in, that are involved in that discussion about the Greater Sunrise royalties. I mean, you know, the realities of what's on the ground in East Timor with 40% of the population under the poverty line, with a lot of malnutrition, with children being stunted at the moment, their growth is not what it could be, and he alluded to that in the mountains, but then didn't seem to even sort of nod to the notion that there will have to be trade-offs, practical trade-offs, in order to achieve change. Now, I mean, look, I'll be honest, I expected to hear a bit more readiness for trade-off.
Well, there's a stark reality confronting East Timor right now, which is this fiscal cliff, and he did acknowledge that. I think the figures are something along the lines of $16 billion left in the state's petroleum fund. Now, the intention with that fund back from the start of independence was that it would be set up and East Timor would be able to trade off the earnings on that, not the base. But as time has gone along and development's been difficult, infrastructure's been difficult, diversification of the economy has been incredibly difficult, they've eaten into the base of that petroleum fund.
They are eating into it more than they're repaying at the moment.
Exactly. And so within this decade, that is expected to run out. And so there's that other set of figures, which is that it would then cost something like $18 billion to develop onshore processing facilities for piped LNG to come to Timor rather than to Darwin. And then that contrasting set of options in the agreement with Australia around the division of royalties. But then obviously, as he makes this point, there's a broader impact for them. It means the development of the southern coastline. It also means the social impact that comes along with all of that. I think it's also worth pointing out that although, you know, he's making it clear his view of developed nations, Western nations coming and saying there are strings attached to whatever we offer you, the other side of that coin is that those foreign nations are pledging public money, taxpayers' money, with which they do have some obligation to say, look, we know where it's going and we know that it will go to the right causes. So I think it's a very difficult proposition to ask any government to drop their expectations attached to any funding that they might give to another country.
Well, it's not an open checkbook. It's as simple as that. And no matter what the historical legacy or duties we owe, it's not an open checkbook.
But Jerry, this is where it gets really tricky, though, for a country like Australia, particularly at a moment like this in an ASEAN context like this. The alternative is a country ends up doing more than just a strategic cooperation agreement with China. A security pact.
Maybe they do. I don't think the Chinese are rushing in. There's nothing I've seen that shows the Chinese are rushing in there.
But the Solomon Islands must surely be in the minds of Australian diplomats when they think about how to approach this, right? If you've got a country like East Timor saying, we actually prefer the option where we get a bit less royalties because we get development with it. We get a southern coastline where there are roads, maybe some airports, broader infrastructure, the capacity to look for more resources in the seas to our south. When you think about the possibility of, you know, failed state status down the track, the enduring fissures of a post-conflict environment, you know, there's got to be serious consideration of that.
Yeah, but he's a man of 77, and, you know, he's a slightly different looking man to the freedom fighter whom we saw before. And I think there's a real issue facing Timor in terms of the succession to the next generation of leaders. I would really also like to hear from the next generation of leaders and whether they're thinking quite as he is. And, you know, I confess I don't know them yet, because they've sort of more or less not been allowed onto the stage, because these older guys who did do such marvellously brave stuff, they're still there. So, look, I suppose I think Timor-Leste has got a lot of questions to ask itself as to how it goes forward. And to have that fiscal cliff hanging over me within 10 years, they must lie awake at night over that. And I might add, so must we. But, I wasn't totally persuaded of the strategic answers that the Prime Minister supplied.
Well, it's been terrific sharing these days with you here in Melbourne at the ASEAN Australia Special Summit, marking 50 years of that relationship. We'll see you for the next full episode of Global Roaming, dropping as usual on Friday and on Radio National on Saturday, Monday and Tuesday. You can get in touch with us, global.roaming@abc.net.au. Please give us a like, a follow, a subscribe, even a comment, depending on which platform.
And we do read everything, believe you me. So thank you. Bye-bye, Hamish.
See you, Jerry.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.